going to do things a little different tonight. We're going to spend a little less time talking from the scripture and save a little bit more time for questions at the end. And let's just start, introduce the subject by turning to the book of Proverbs, chapter 5. Okay. I'm going to start in verse 15, Proverbs chapter 5. Drink water from your own cistern, and running water from your own well. Let your fountains be overflowing, streams of water in the streets. Let them be only your own, and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed, rejoice with the wife of your youth, as a loving deer, as a graceful doe. Let her breast satisfy you at all times, and always be ravished with her love. Why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced in the arms of a seductress? For the eyes of man are before, for the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his ways. His own iniquities entrap the wicked man, and he is caught in the cords of his sin. He shall die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall be ravished. Same word that's used up above for being ravished with the love of a woman. I want to talk a little bit tonight about sexual purity from an aspect of what waits in front of you. So many times there are two different ways of looking at how we conduct ourselves in this life. One motivation works on what you might call, I guess I heard somebody use the phrase this week, the imperative. Do this, don't do this. Do this, don't do this. And the other works on a different basis, from the indicative to the imperative. Who you are determines what you do. Okay? One way says, don't do this, and don't do this, and don't do this. Set up these rules in your life, and then you will be this kind of person. If you have these rules, if you have this set of boundaries, if you have this lifestyle, this is the kind of person you will be. The other approach says, look at who God has made you. Look at who you are. Look at what God has set in front of you, and that will determine what you do. That will determine how you act. That what you do grows out of who you are. First of all, I think that approach is biblical. Jesus Christ says that sin comes out of the heart. Sin doesn't come from any other place than from within us. We're talking about spiritual warfare. You just got to be careful. Sin doesn't come from demons. Sin doesn't come from the outside. Comes from inside of you. James says very, very plainly that sin's inside of you, and it's when you inside reach out and look at something and pull it into yourself, that's when it becomes sin. An example, we're going to talk pretty plainly tonight. Let's talk first of all about things like pornography. It's always there. And to a certain extent, pornography is in the eye of the beholder. The real sad part is that pornography is in the heart of the beholder. There's a part of you, a sinful part of you, that is always going to be working against the part of you that God has made you to be. And that sinful part of you is always going to be looking for weapons, is always going to be looking for opportunities to feed itself. It's called the flesh. And the flesh is that part of you that you were born with, that part that you came into this world with. Okay? That part of you where sin dwells. Okay? And that part of you is always looking to feed itself, is always on the lookout. Your body always wants to feed itself. You always crave sleep. You always need water. Okay? And there's also a part of you that is always going to want the kinds of sexual activity that are not good for you, the kinds of sexual activity that are inherently fleshly, meaning they're not what God has designed for you. And so you've got to be so cautious, because sin is not out there waiting for you, and if your eyes happen upon it, you sin. You have a part of you inside that's looking for an outlet, that's looking for things, and that's what the Bible says, and that's what Jesus said. It's out of the heart that everything flows, and that you have to be cautious, because even as a born-again believer, okay, you have within you things that want to be fed. And so you have a choice. You can either say, well, what I need to do is put a clamp, put a lid, put a series of rules, put a lifestyle all around me like a wall that is going to protect me from those outside influences, that is going to keep me. You know what I'm trying to say? I can't do this and I can't do that. Won't do you any good. The monks try that. Go off to a monastery and live, where all they got to look at is gray walls and brown cassocks, you know, eating vegetables and sinning. Sin's inside of you. You can't put a wall. What you have to do is to say, who I am in Christ will grow inside of me every day. The reality of the gospel. Again, and just brought it to my attention this week. I'm teaching Romans in May school. The heart of Romans is, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it's the power of God unto salvation. That doesn't mean it's the power of God unto regeneration. Salvation is a lot more than regeneration. So regeneration is just the time when the salvation that Jesus purchased for you becomes your possession. Regeneration is just the first time where you and your salvation are united. But you will spend this entire life growing in salvation. Sanctification is part of salvation. Glorification. The gospel is the power of God unto sanctification. That means if you want to be sanctified, you keep looking back to what Christ did for you. You keep looking back to the gospel, that I died with Christ and I'm alive with Christ. And that if you want to walk in this world in a way that is not only pure, but then in a way that is satisfying. You know, so many people aim for purity, and they end up trying to beat down the desires inside of them, or trying to deny the desires inside of them, or trying to redirect the desires inside of them, instead of saying, you know what? God has designed me for satisfaction in Him, and I've got to seek satisfaction. God wants me to be satisfied. Do you realize that the Garden of Eden was filled with delight? Sensual delight. Every place you looked, and God made the trees that were what? Wonderful to look at and great for the taste. Okay, there wasn't a lot of granola and muselings running around the garden, you know. It's not like here. Add some celery, you know. This is good stuff. Well, what you have to understand is I am supposed to be living a life where I am satisfied. And where do I find my satisfaction? When you look at this passage, a couple things. Drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Constantly in the Bible, eating and drinking are metaphors for sex and sexual activity. It's constant. Okay? You'll just find it over and over again. Let me give you an example. Proverbs chapter 31 or 30. Verse 20. This is the way of an adulterous woman. She eats and wipes her mouth and said, I have done no wickedness. That's a pretty graphic illustration that it's talking about there. Okay. Proverbs 30, verse 15 is not? Is that not correct? Verse 20, I'm sorry. And so it's obviously using eating. Many times the Bible uses drinking, okay? Especially in the book of Song of Solomon, let's take our fill of love as wine goes smoothly over the lips of the sleeper, okay? And what it's trying to say is you need to take pleasure in that person that God has given to you for you to take pleasure. Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. God says, I want you to take pleasure in the things that I have given to you to give you pleasure. There are so many different ways that you can take pleasure in this life, sexually as well as other ways. Okay? And just because they're more available to you in certain ways today doesn't mean that life is any different for you than it was for people 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. Ancient Rome was just as immoral as modern New York City. Don't let anybody give you the argument that it's tougher for you than it was for anybody else. That's a lie. It's the same sin that's inside of you that was inside of anybody else, and it wants to get out, and it wants to dominate you. And one of the first principles you have to learn is, God has set things in front of me to give me pleasure. Okay? And by the way, you cannot distinguish between spiritual pleasure and physical pleasure. You can't. Maybe they come in different ways, but they're both pleasure. I mean, the joy that you feel over winning something, the joy that you feel over seeing somebody else succeed, the joy that you feel in answered prayer, the joy that you feel is just joy. See what I'm trying to say? It comes from a different source, but it still produces that same sense of pleasure in you. And you have to look at life and yourself as a sexual being and say, you know, God has designed the ways in which I will get pleasure. And God has said, take them from the places I say you get them from. Don't take them in other places. I think it's interesting when he begins, there are two ways of looking at the next verse. One's positive and one's negative. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets? Or it can be saying, let your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets. It's the concept of God wants you to have a sexual life that's free and unrestricted and unhampered and what's the term I want to use? Unpolluted. That God has designed you, most of you, not everybody in this room, but God has designed most of you that will be one of the greatest sources of pleasure for a certain period of your life. There'll be a certain period of your life where it is not. Okay? There'll be a certain period of your life where, if you're like most people, nothing will bring you pleasure at the end of your days. All right? That's life's curve. You know what I'm trying to say? God never intends for everything to last, every pleasure, every joy, every hurt, to last forever. But you've got to give some thought to the fact that what God has designed for you is supposed to be free and unrestricted. Let me talk to you about some things that can restrict that pleasure once you're married. Okay? First, let's talk about some of the most obvious. Okay? This would be more of a lecture that I would give to women than to men. Life isn't fair. Women pay more for sin than men pay for sin. Okay? They are the weaker vessel. And so the weaker vessel pays when something wrong goes wrong with that. Weaker vessel doesn't mean they're not as smart or not as spiritual for you. It means they pay for things. Sexually transmitted diseases. I don't know that we have any class here on sexually transmitted diseases. At one point in my life, I taught this subject at colleges. I worked with Campus Bible Fellowship. The figures of sexually transmitted diseases are shocking. That a sexually active adult is considered somebody who has 3 or more sexual encounters per year. Okay? Sexual encounter is anything involving sexual activity. That's anything involving sexual organs. That means touching a person, their oral sex, intercourse, anything. A sexually active person is someone who has 3 or more. On most college campuses, that would be like, you know, the way that people treat it today. Among sexually active adults in America, 2 out of 3 have a sexually transmitted disease. Out of those who have a sexually transmitted disease, 1 in 6 knows about it. So you know this old saying, talk to your partner? You know, that'll help you with sexual trauma. Just talk about it. If only 1 in 6 knows, okay, about half of women contract sexually transmitted diseases without knowing it. Gonorrhea. Every time you or a woman contracts gonorrhea, every time, and you contract it more than once, by the way, Every time you contract it, your chances of becoming sterile are 1 in 4. If you contract it twice, you have a 50% chance of being sterile. And for the woman, it scars the tubes, the fallopian tubes. So that means that a woman can have one sexual encounter and be sterile. She can pay for it. She can be married. And I cannot tell you how many Christian counselors, when couples come to them and they have trouble having children, they go to the doctor. And they find out that one or other of them is unable to have children. And that is, at one time, I don't know if it's still true, the leading cause of infertility in America today. So all of a sudden, you've taken a woman and taken away what is, for a woman, perhaps the greatest source of joy that she can have. Women will take more joy in their children than they will in you. You know, it ain't fair, but they do, all right? Then, and you're saying, I paid for that little dude, you know. He's nothing but grief, and she's taking pleasure about him, you know. Think of what it means when a woman is robbed of having a child. Now think about what it means if you were the one who caused her to be robbed of that joy, and you never knew it. Think of that. That what you've done is robbed much less yourself. What if you marry, and your wife cannot have natural children because of something you've done? And you know, just play the odds. Just play the odds for sexual encounter. And by the way, that's heterosexual or homosexual. That's not just, you see what I'm trying to say? Just think of every single time that you get water from somebody else's cistern, from a cistern that doesn't belong to you. Every single time you do that, it's like Russian roulette. Is that meant to scare you? Yes, it's meant to scare you. What I'm saying is, don't you understand that the things you do now, every time you do it, you're either going into it knowingly saying, I'll just play the odds, or else you're saying, I don't care. I don't care the fact that I am restricting the joy that I was meant to have in marriage. Okay? That's from something as simple as gonorrhea. By the way, it's very easy to have gonorrhea, especially for a woman, and not to know it. Never to know that she has it until it's too late. Or for you. All right? Now, gonorrhea is far from the most common sexually transmitted diseases. It goes back and forth. Chlamydia is right now the most common sexually transmitted disease. Okay, for every sexually transmitted disease, it's easier for a woman to get it than it is for a man. Okay, it's because of the nature of the moisture in women and the receptivity of women. And so women are at great risk, and they're at great risk from men. They're at great risk from men who don't care that they've now restricted someone else's joy, that they have taken a great source of sexual pleasure is intended for a lot of things. It's a lot of fun, all right? Got to tell you. But I want to tell you the other thing is there's a sense in which you're sharing something with someone that nobody else in the world has. Nobody else in the world has what the two of you have. Other people have something like it, but they don't have that. But if you've had a situation where you're carrying into the marriage something that can hurt that other person, wow, do you want to be the one to talk to her about it before you get married or after you get married? I will not allow a couple to go, and we talk about the wedding night, and they have to be frank and share what every sexual encounter that they have had that could have resulted in anything that might be resembling a disease. They have to. It used to be, by the way, that you had to get tested for sexually transmitted diseases before you got married. Now you don't have to. Can you imagine how common? I'm not talking about AIDS, okay? I'm not talking about, by the way, it's relatively difficult with sexually transmitted diseases to contract AIDS. AIDS is one of the most difficult STDs to contract. Okay? Did you know that? Okay. In order for a person to get AIDS, Okay, it is directly related to the amount of, we'll call it, infectious material, i.e. semen, and directly related to the amount of receptive things where that sexually transmitted material can touch T cells. T cells are part of your immune syndrome. Okay, you do not have, a woman does not have a lot of T cells normally in her sexual tract. You know how you get a lot of T cells in your sexual tract? By having sexually transmitted diseases. So people who have sexually transmitted diseases are far more likely to contract AIDS or HIV and then AIDS, both of them. First to get HIV positive and then for the HIV to develop into AIDS, it's directly proportionate to the presence of T cells, which is directly proportionate to sexually transmitted diseases. So that means that you have to, it's kind of like the figure is that, by the way, this figure goes up directly proportionate to certain kinds of sex, okay? Homosexual sex, male-to-male sex, anal sex is the most potent way to get it, to pass on sexually transmitted diseases, by far the most potent way to do that, okay? Except for places like Africa where they're not necessarily transmitted sexually. There's a lot of blood-to-blood contact and other things in Africa, and AIDS in Africa is just huge. But what we're talking about is just the risk of sexually transmitted diseases alone when you stop to think about what that can do. I'm not talking about AIDS and death. I'm talking about simply taking away the right and the privilege to have children with somebody else, to take away all the hopes and dreams that your wife has of having her own child, of having a child that looks like you, of having, you know what I'm trying to say? Why would anybody do that? Worse, and it's much worse, the guilt that you carry into it, the guilt that you carry. There aren't too many guys who've reached your age who haven't been caught up in the sin of masturbation at some time. Masturbation is not like killing somebody or running over an old lady with a pickup truck on a street corner kind of sin, but it is sin. Sex outside of marriage is sin. Okay? It's sin. There's just no two ways around it. All right? There are sins that you're prone to in your youth. There are sins that you're prone to when you're older. It's not worse than lying, but lying's bad enough. And the more you lie, the deeper your sin gets and the more other problems it engenders. Okay? So, think of the guilt that that brings. Now imagine the guilt that having sexual relations, improper sexual relations brings, intercourse with someone brings. I'm not going to define sexual relations in terms of what you should or shouldn't do as you're approaching marriage, and what you call sex, touching a person, kissing, those kinds of stuff. I'm not going there. Let's just talk simply right now about intercourse. The guilt that brings into marriage. If it doesn't bring guilt to you, it brings guilt to that woman. A guy can shrug off guilt in such an easy way that it is sick. Inside of him, it's building up a pathway. It's like running water in your lawn. After you run it for a while, there's a rut. And any water in the lawn goes right for that rut. And every time you commit a sin, it's a little bit of the rut, and a little bit more, and eventually everything runs in that direction. And you may not feel the guilt, but you'll feel it later. And think of the guilt that you brought to that person. Now you want to have an intimate relationship with someone, but there's a part of you that can't give wholly. There's a part of you that's got something in the back. So no longer is it complete, absolute, 100% intimacy. No longer is it just you and me and nobody else in the world. It's you and me and maybe somebody else. Why would you get... And by the way, once it goes, it goes. Once you lose your innocence, you don't get your innocence back. You can be forgiven. You can say, I've restored my purity, but you'll never restore your innocence. You know what I'm trying to say? You have no idea what a precious gift innocence is. You have no idea how wonderful it is to be innocent of sin and not have to worry about it. Never have to worry about it. It's such a gift to my wife that she never has to worry about my conduct. Never. only by the grace of God. You know, it's not like I'm some kind of moral giant, but she never has to worry about my conduct. If I don't come home tonight till 2 in the morning, my wife is not going to wonder, you know, other than the fact that I'm, you know, the truck's hanging off a cliff someplace or like that, you know. She's had reason to wonder about that, but she never has to wonder about me. My wife never has to watch me when I'm around other women. My wife, there's a sense of freedom for her there. When we are together, there's never anything holding back. And I didn't have to enter into marriage with that. That never. By the way, if you've lost that innocence, there are things that you can do to say, but I want to regain the purity. I want to say, okay, Lord, where do I go from here? Never look at your life that once you've lost your innocence, your life is ruined, any more than a divorced person has to look at their life and say, okay, my service for God is over. But you should always look at your life and say, divorce is wrong, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to avoid it. You've got to work on both sides. We have the most loving, forgiving God, the most gracious God in the world. But that gracious God gave you a gift of innocence, and you keep that innocence. You can lose your innocence in pornography. I don't have to tell you guys, once you see something, you never forget it. Never forget it. You need to concentrate right now not to remember the last time you looked at pornography and what that image was. Don't you? And you know how much it grows every time you see it? How much is there? Second, do you know how sick pornography is? No, you don't. Because you've never slept with your wife. And you don't know that that's the most ridiculous nonsense that goes on in the world. Pornography is nothing like sexual intimacy. It is nothing like it. It's kind of like thinking life works like the Roadrunner and, you know, Wile E. Coyote. And, you know, expecting that when you know, you can send away for an Acme bomb, or expecting that, you know, you can drive off a cliff and then be up there the next day on the cliff. You know, it is that absurd, these kinds of stuff that go on. And that you look at it like, other things. Okay? If you require to take my hand, keep slapping it on the table. I don't know what that's going to do to this. I just keep slapping it on the table. Pretty soon, my feeling of touch, you know what I'm trying to say, would be gone. You'd be amazed at how you can rut up your mind, how you can track up your mind. It's like putting ruts in your tires. You'll feel them every time you drive. You fill your mind with pornography, and you bring that into sexual encounters with your wife. And you've rutted up your mind. And it's not pure. And you're insensitive. You can get so much joy out of the smallest thing with the right woman. Or you can dull your senses to the place where you're going to be asking her for things that she will never be comfortable with. You're going to be asking and expecting her and looking at her in certain ways, and you're going to have a constant battle. You could have kept yourself from having sexual intercourse with a person, but then run up your mind with pornography, and then you enter into your wedding night, and you're trying to look at your wife through new eyes. What you've done is you've thrown away the food for a picture of the food. You know what I'm saying? It's like you spent your whole life looking at pictures of food so much that when somebody gives you the food, you don't taste it anymore. How foolish is that? That is stupid. But that's what people are. They're stupid. That, trust me, there's a stupidity inside of you. It's there, just waiting for a chance. Never underestimate your stupidity. Never underestimate how foolish you can be at any given time. Let he who thinks he stands take heed lest he falls, the Bible says. And you've got to look and say, you know what? I want that kind of relationship with my wife. I don't know if you realize that that's the kind of relationship that grows. Personally, I believe that relationship has to start before your wedding night. I personally don't believe, you'll talk to other teachers here who will disagree, I've been a pastor for as long as just about anybody. I don't personally believe you go from 0 to 60 in one night. Okay? If you're not talking to your wife, to the woman you're going to marry, if you're not becoming more intimate in different ways with her, that wedding night becomes a very awkward experience. But she also has to trust you. Do you also realize that what a fight women have with self-consciousness? That your wife will wonder whether you look at her with desire. That every time a woman looks in a mirror, she sees flaws and defects. Guy looks in a mirror and goes, looking good. A woman looks in the mirror and goes, I've got to cover this up, got to do this, you know. Men, you don't realize how self-conscious women are. You can never. If you did, again, you'd be very cautious in ever making fun of any woman. And I said this before, wait until you get a daughter. Your whole opinion about how you talk about women will change when you see the pain they go through. But your wedding night, your wife is going to be wondering what she looks like to you. And you're going to, with her, be responsible to understand that you are not a receiver of pleasure, you're also a giver of pleasure. By the way, that I didn't get to it. That's the third reason why masturbation is wrong, because it's receiving pleasure, not giving pleasure. Sex is meant to be giving and receiving. It's not meant to be receiving. It's meant to be both at once. That's everything that goes on. By the way, it's the same with God. God did not make you simply to receive things from Him. He made you to return. He gives to you in grace, you return to Him in prayer. He gives to you in grace, you return to Him in thanksgiving. And if you're just receiving things from God, you'll become a sick Christian. You have to give back to God. That's His cycle. Okay? It doesn't start with giving to God. It's a cycle that goes around. And so you have to look at yourself and say, what have I become? How am I looking at this? By the way, it's not easy for a woman to receive pleasure. Women are wired different than men. They are wired to be very self-conscious. They're wired to believe that a woman who receives pleasure is going to be treated by a man as if she's some sort of immoral woman. Why? Because how many men have looked at pictures of immoral women to gain pleasure before they were married? So no wonder a wife would think that you might look at that afterwards. See the problems that just kind of grow and grow and grow? And all these problems come to rest in one place when you want to have a godly, wonderful, overflowing relationship with a single woman. Then you have a situation where you've brought to the table, you've brought to the bed, all of these things that don't belong there. And it is the craziest thing I've ever seen. We put sexual icons on TV. Guys who, this double standard is horrible. A guy who sleeps with a woman, sleeps with 2 to 3 women is an icon. A woman who sleeps with 2 to 3 men, she's some kind of, you know, harlot, some kind of, you know, tramp or whatever you want to call it. I'm being taped, so I'm not going to use, you know, too many words, you know. I don't know who uses the word tramp anymore other than for the lady in the tramp, but, you know, I'm not talking about him, you know, I don't know. But what I'm trying to say is that you got to realize your wife is going to be looking at you. She's going to be wondering what you think about her. She's going to be wanting to know whether she can trust you. You're going to have to build a relationship with her where she can receive pleasure as well as give pleasure, and where you can give pleasure as well as receive. And that's not something you can do if you brought sin to the table easily. Let me pause before I go farther. You can do all things in Christ. Please don't think, I'm talking to some of you who've already messed up your lives to some degree. Please don't think I'm saying it's gone forever. I want to start by saying, for those of you who haven't, don't. For those of you who are, stop. For those of you who have, say, well, how do I deal with this? Part of it comes from premarital counseling. You need to talk first one-on-one with the pastor. Talk with a man who enjoys a sexual relationship with his wife, just like your wife should talk with a woman who enjoys a sexual relationship. I am absolutely amazed at what the women on this campus are told about sex. My mouth drops open. My wife cannot believe what some of the women are told. And it just, you know. When you stop and think about it, if you're a happily married man, by the time you reach my age, you've had sex thousands of times. How can you do something thousands of times and still enjoy it? And it not be old? And it not be the same old thing? How can that, right now, it might seem like, oh, that would never happen. Oh, it can happen if you get your mind messed up. It can happen unless it's an act of love. It can happen unless it's something that is about you and the other person. It happens to a lot of people. That's why marriages break up after the kids leave the house. Because they've done everything, had everything, been there, and there's nothing new and fresh for them. And this writer knew what he was talking about. Let them be your own and not for strangers with you. It's not for others. I'm telling you, others include people in pictures, include women you look at over the internet. We're talking freely here. One of the reasons why homosexuality is so widely accepted is because it's so much a part of pornography. The figures say that so much pornography involves two women. I don't watch a lot of TV in certain areas. Some areas I do. I watch abundant soccer. That's why I have ESPN, so I can watch English soccer and not have to watch American soccer. Okay? All right. But, okay, on Friends, constant jokes about I want to see two women kissing. It becomes almost commonplace. How bad is it in society when that's funny? It's so commonplace that's funny. And what kind of relationships are people bringing into marriage when that would actually be considered funny or normal that somebody should derive some kind of excitement from seeing something like that? Something's wrong here, people. And what's wrong is that nobody's thought about the fact that, I don't care, that person in pornography is a stranger that you're sharing sex with. You're taking pleasure out of a stranger, and you were never meant to. You were meant to take pleasure out of one person with whom you're intimate. That's who you were designed for. Anything else is going to be what he says down here. It's a snare. In the greatness of his folly, in verse 23, he'll go astray. In the enormity of his stupidity, he'll be ensnared. He'll be captured. Notice what else he says. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. Tell your wife. Tell your wife how beautiful she is. Tell her. By the way, I think that there has to come a time when you're engaged, the closer you get to marriage, that both of you know that you desire one another, that you're able to express your desire for one another, and that you're able to say, we need to express this because you need to know that it's on my mind so that we're not dealing with this in a sinful way. My personal belief is that the things you do before you're married are not the same standards for every couple who ever walked the face of the earth. It's different for different cultures. It's different for different families in which you were raised. It has a lot to do with what you may or may not have done before in your life and in your activity. The most ironic thing is the more innocent you are, the more freedom you'll have. The less innocent you are, the less freedom you'll have. It's the truth. And it's a lot, another reason to maintain your innocence and like that. But it says, let that person know, let them be blessed. Let them know that you take pleasure in them. And a lot of men don't do that. There's a lot of men who have no sense of giving their wife the self-confidence that part of the pleasure that a woman enjoys is the sense that I was one who found pleasure in his eyes. Remember, I don't know if you remember, that was from Song of Solomon. Let me just read this to you here. We're going to be a little more explicit since the women aren't here. Song of Solomon 8:8. Wow, hold it. I'm going on too long here. I'll just read this and stop here. I didn't have any idea what time. Okay, I'll do this and stop. We have a little sister. She has no breasts. What should we do for our sister the day she's spoken for? Who'd want her? She's flat. You know, she's shapeless. Nobody wants her. She's too little. That's what the brothers think of her. If she's a wall, i.e., what? Okay, we will build on her a battlement of silver. Okay, Well, I'll put a nice little silver crown on her head, and the guy will never notice the fact that she's got no shape, you know. If she's a door, we'll enclose her with boards of cedar. She's like a flat door, you know. We'll dress her up a little bit, you know. But, we can do something for anybody. Isn't that wonderful how brothers make their sisters feel so good about themselves, you know? Then she says, question, I am a wall? My breasts were like towers. I became in his eyes as one who found peace. She said, that's not how my lover looks at me. That's not how he looks at me. And I get my sense of who I am, my sense of a giver of pleasure, my sense of sexuality from my lover. Somebody's depending upon you for that. If you're going to be married, somebody's depending upon you for that. As a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be ravished with her love. Always. That's a command. I believe the Bible commands that you both love a person and be in love with them. They're both commands. If you have one without the other, your relationship will sour. If you're in love with a person and there's no biblical love, your relationship will sour quickly. If you love a person but are not in love with them, are not ravished with them, are not completely taken with them, your love will sour, your relationship will sour. I believe you have a responsibility to do both. But both are things that require a positive, spiritual, what's the term I want to use? Proactive approach. And saying, this is something that I want to guard. I don't want to waste a second of my life. I don't want to waste a second of the things God has for me. I don't want to do this. And every time you're faced with temptation, you have two approaches. Put up the doors, put up the guards. I don't want to see it. I don't want to think it. And it's inside your mind. Or looking at it and saying, I need to look at that a different way. I need to look at that as a thief and a robber and a sick diversion from what in the world God has put in front of me. I have to look at that as something that could absolutely destroy the life of another human being that I love. By the way, another statistic in Bible college, 1 out of 6 young women have been sexually abused. 1 out of 6 in this institution, I think the figures are right now, we have 500 young women. How many women in this institution have been sexually abused? Roughly 90. That means you very well may date and marry a person who has already been scarred to the hilt by some sick individual who took pleasure from them and didn't give pleasure. You need to ask that question, by the way, and you need to that's something women have to be dealt with. And by the way, there's a good number of young men who have been as well. The figures aren't as high for young men, but there's a good number. And that is something that is just absolute sickness that runs. And so you may be in a relationship with somebody who needs you more than you will ever know. And here you've been spending your life, your sexuality, on things that will hurt her, instead of saying, I need to be the kind of person who can do more than help her. Maybe that person that you're marrying can't meet you halfway. Maybe that person that you're marrying needs more help. You know what I'm trying to say? You need to be the kind of person who says, I want to give that kind of help. Do you realize that a good number of people, the first place they saw pornography was from their father, in their father's home? A good number of homes pass on sexually transmitted diseases. I'm not talking about physical, I'm talking about mentally sexually transmitted diseases. It passes from fathers to sons. Things sexually, I'm talking about the wrong thoughts, wrong actions, wrong patterns. These are all things that you don't have to go there. It never has to happen. That's why it's called stupidity. Stupidity in the Bible is always something where you had a choice and a better choice and you chose the foolish one. If you have no choice, it's still sin, but it's not folly. But when you've got a wonderful choice and you've got a horrible choice and you choose the horrible choice, that's folly. That's stupidity. Why would we do those kinds of things? And the answer is not simply put up a wall. Personally, I believe habits are very useful. I have habits that I use because I haven't developed the personal discipline and because I am in a circumstance where I need habits. I have a habit always of as soon as I get into the car, I buckle up my seatbelt. That's a habit I have. I don't ever want to be in a place, not because it's a law, but because I'll forget. And things I've seen things happen. Had some of my family die because they didn't do it. So it's a habit I have. Nothing wrong with habits. There's nothing wrong with you establishing godly habits, but you can't depend on them. Godly habits only take you so far. They're a wall around you, and but you forget that the sin's inside of you. And if you just try to prevent access from the outside to sin to you, we dismissed somebody last semester for spending 3.5 hours on pornographic websites. Somebody who knew very well that every website you visit is recorded downstairs. You knew that, of course, right? There isn't a single website you go to that's not recorded downstairs and not checked out periodically. You spend 3 hours, you spend 15 minutes, somebody's going to know about it. Okay? This person knew it. Then I haven't knew it. You say, how stupid can you get? Don't ever ask that question. You can get stupider. You will get stupider. Don't trust yourself. Trust God by putting in front of you the joy that's set before you, by putting in front of you the pleasure that God has for you, by putting in front of you the right thing. I'll set those things in front of my eyes, and I will look at the things the way that are sick and sinful as sick and sinful.